broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on a getaway Friday, last day of March, March the 31st, 2023. 16 minutes past the hour, and you are with us on an historic day. And you know, we use that word quite a bit, but history was made yesterday here in the United States. Now, I want to tell you a little bit about what's going on today before we get to our first guest, and our first guest could not be more important and informative on a day like this. This morning at 11:15 a.m. Eastern Time, we're going to be joined in studio by the 40th Treasurer of the United States under President Bill Clinton, Mary Ellen Withrow, to get her reaction to what happened yesterday. Also this morning at 10:15 a.m. Eastern, we're going to be joined by legendary talk show host and a man who was on Richard Nixon's enemies list, the legendary Dick Cavett, will give his first thoughts on what happened yesterday. So you're saying, what happened yesterday? Well, I think we all know what happened yesterday. If you're picking up a newspaper this morning, looking on the internet, listening to a radio station, listening to a podcast, the topics are all the same this morning. The 45th president of the United States, Donald J. Trump, was indicted yesterday by a New York grand jury. We have had 46 presidents in the United States. We have had impeachments, but never an indictment of a president sitting or past in the nearly 250-year history of this country. A lot of information is still to come. We're just getting trickles of things in the last 24 hours, but history certainly has been made. And joining us for the first hour this morning is really the person to kick this all off today. Couldn't ask for any better guest. You probably remember him best for his stints on Primetime Live on the ABC News Network, a top 10 news magazine for many years in primetime, and also on Sunday Morning with David Brinkley, and then a co-host on that program with the late Cokie Roberts, the legendary newsman himself, Sam Donaldson. Sam, how are you?
Well, Scott, I'm here, ready to go, because this is a very historic day. Yesterday, certainly, and what's going to happen from here on. And you know, what's happened is not just that a former president, unprecedented, has been indicted on criminal charges, Donald J. Trump, but that the battle has been joined. The shadow boxing is over. A battle for the soul of this country, really, between Mr. Trump and his many numerous supporters and the other side has been joined in the courts. And there are more indictments to come, surely. And let us just hope that the battle is not joined in the streets, although some of the commentary from Mr. Trump's supporters, not all, does not look favorable from the standpoint of preventing violence.
Sam, I think one of the things last night as I talked to people who maybe are not in the news business, not in the media business, their question simply was, what happened yesterday that made news networks break into programming, that made cable networks stay with it all night? What essentially happened?
Well, what happened was something that's never happened in this country before, but it has overtones and could be read or misread as what has happened in banana republics, where politicians, political leaders, are quite frequently joined in the courts with spurious charges, are taken from power unjustly, a banana republic, we call it. But that's never happened here. I don't think it's happening here now, but, again, Mr. Trump's supporters are at least divided, if not clearly on his side, from the standpoint of why this is happening. It's not a question for them, so many of them, that there are accusations lodged, and the president, former president, will have a fair trial. Everyone insists on that, with a jury of his peers selected by everybody, including his defense attorneys. and they will judge the evidence, and the public will see the evidence, and people will make up their minds according to the evidence. What the fear is that the people on Mr. Trump's side have already judged him, innocent, have already taken to account what he said when he learned about the indictment. Let me just read a little of it. This is Donald J. Trump. Quote, "Democrats have lied, cheated, and stolen in their obsession with trying to get Trump. But now they've done the unthinkable. Indicting a completely innocent person is an act of blatant election interference. Never before in our nation's history has this been done." Now, we would expect that from Mr. Trump because of his past statements over a great number of years on almost all subjects. We would not just expect that he would say, "I'm innocent," and that will be proved in court. And I'm sure it's fairly judged, the testimony and the evidence that will be presented. The nation and the world will see that I'm innocent. He's not going to say that. He's instead throwing down the gauntlet that it's a destructive thing to get him unfairly to interfere with an election coming up. And that's not very favorable from the standpoint of having a discussion in courts with the solemnity that deserves, that finds one way or the other on charges. It's not favorable at all.
Sam, the one thing yesterday that was quite stark, first time this has ever happened. We've said that now several times. Everybody was saying that yesterday, and I'm sure it'll be said a lot more today. Now, in our lifetime, Bill Clinton was impeached. President Trump was impeached twice. And we've also got Richard Nixon, who was not impeached, left office, and then was pardoned. What is different here than those cases, which didn't even lead to a removal from office or charges after the presidency? Well, I guess in Donald Trump's case, that's not so now.
Well, you say, what's the difference here? The difference may be just degree, but it is a huge degree. I'm going to read just a little excerpt from the New York Times editorial today. You can disagree with what they say, obviously, but they point out, I think, the answer to your question. Quote, "Donald Trump spent years as a candidate in office and out of office, ignoring democratic and legal norms and precedents, trying to bend the Justice Department and the judiciary to his whims and behaving as if rules didn't apply to him. Mr. Trump completely transformed the relationship between the presidency and the rule of law, often asserting that a president is above the law. So it is appropriate that his actions as president and as a candidate should now be formally weighed by judges and juries, with the possibility of criminal penalties on the line. But a healthy respect for the legal system also requires Americans to set aside their politics and judge him on the merits, and he deserves the presumption of innocence unless found otherwise." But so that's the side against Trump that says it's time that he be called to account, and if there are charges that the evidence supports, then he'll have to pay the penalty. And that's the difference.
Now, politics is coming into this by a lot of people. A lot of people in the Republican Party, a lot of people, Donald Trump himself, is calling it a political persecution in quite a lengthy statement yesterday. Now, for people who don't understand, when the impeachments were happening, the two impeachments of Donald Trump, yes, those were being voted on by elected Republicans and Democrats. A grand jury in New York yesterday voted to indict him. What is a grand jury, and why is this not political?
Well, a grand jury is a bunch of citizens who are called to service, just as you and I might be called to a petit jury for a criminal or a civil case. It's not a specialist. It's not people who are lawyers. It's not people who have views and opinions already expressed. It's a bunch of citizens who are brought to a room formally, and a prosecutor comes and says, "We have evidence of a crime. We'd like you to consider the possibility of indictment against certain people," and they present their evidence. Now, there's a saying in courts, it's a cynical one, but I'll just repeat it, maybe you've heard it, that a skillful prosecutor can get a grand jury of just ordinary citizens to indict a ham sandwich. I think that's too cynical. But that's what's there. And the grand jury has, in this case, seen fit to vote for an indictment of Donald J. Trump on the evidence presented to it, but it's not a conclusive evidence. It does not say that these people say the man is guilty. No, it now goes to a pettit jury, a common jury that we're all familiar with, who will decide whether there's enough evidence to find guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. But this process had to take place, or else he would never have to face the pettit jury.
Now, Sam, another thing here, Alvin Bragg, we're seeing a lot about him lately, a Manhattan district attorney, who is bringing this indictment along with the grand jury. There is thought yesterday, and there was a lot of speculation on a lot of shows and in a lot of periodicals, that if you are going to be the first person, and he is now, to lay the indictment on a former or sitting president in the nearly 250-year history of this country, you're not going to do that with half evidence. Maybe we could win this case. There's a 50-50 chance. Let's put him on trial. If we win, we win. If we lose, we lose. What did we lose? That there would have to be a heavy-duty chance that we're going to win this trial. Now, yes, Mr. Trump is entitled to a fair trial, a jury of his own peers, but wouldn't you think the case would have to be awful strong for him to bring this?
Well, I do, and I think what you suggest is also true. This case does not appear, at least this moment, to be not only not airtight, but from the standpoint of, and I'm not a lawyer, I'm quoting other lawyers, from the standpoint of the legal procedure in a case like this to actually been thought through. And again, I don't mean to rely on newspapers here, but I'm taken by some of the editorials this morning. And the Washington Post speaks to the point that you've just spoken to. I'm quoting, Donald Trump deserves the legal scrutiny he's getting, which comes from many corners and many counts. Yet, the likely charges on which a grand jury in New York State voted to indict him are perhaps the least compelling. There's cause for concern and caution ahead. And to wind it up from the Washington Post, public perception and political strategy shouldn't dissuade a district attorney from bringing a solid case, but neither should they persuade him to bring a shaky one. This prosecution needs to be airtight. Otherwise, it's not worth continuing. And I agree with that. Of all the things, and there are other indictments coming, this is the dam has broken. We have now Jack Smith, the special counsel that appointed by the Department of Justice to try to remove it from the idea that the Department of Justice was biased against Trump, is looking at the possibility of indictments on removing from the White House, taking to his personal residence, and an allegation of obstruction of justice on the documents that are classified. And also on the suggestion that he formulated, Mr. Trump did, the insurrection on January 6th against the Capitol of the United States. And those are much more serious. If there's evidence of that, and there's some public evidence to suggest that at least it's right to probe this situation, that's much more serious than this one. Forgive me. This is based on sex. And you say, well, why do you bring that up, Sam? Because the mores and the view of sex in public prosecution has changed. In 1987, Gary Hart, the senator from Colorado, who was thought to be the leader for the Democratic nomination, had to remove himself from the possibility of running because of an association with a woman other than his wife. In 1992, Bill Clinton barely escaped Jennifer Flowers and her tapes of their association, and of course, Monica Lewinsky. And it goes on to the point where if people look at this and say, well, wait a moment, the allegation is that through his lawyer, Michael Cohen, who'll be the chief witness perhaps, and has also gone to jail for lying to Congress and another violation, so he's going to be a shaky witness from the standpoint of the prosecution, that the allegation is Mr. Trump arranged for a payment to the porn star Stormy Daniels, that they had an association on one occasion in 2006 so that she wouldn't complain about it publicly in the 2016 election. And that he did it through this lawyer. Well, it's a kind of involved case. But if it comes down in the public's mind that, hey, it's about sex, yeah, maybe, hey, I don't know. We're not for that, public officials, but we don't think it's worth prosecuting a former president, then it perhaps is a case that shouldn't have been brought.
You know, Sam, one of the fascinating things here, and we don't know what's in the indictment yet. It has not been unsealed as of yet. But a lot of this, as you said, just goes back to the $130,000 payment that went to adult film star Stormy Daniels. Hush money, basically, is what this was. Michael Cohen has testified to this. This apparently became a campaign finance issue because it was funneled through the campaign 2016 election. Now, there are reports, and again, we don't know because we have not seen the indictment, but CNN is a reputable news source, and there are some others reporting this morning, that 30 counts of business fraud are in this indictment. So we're talking a lot about Stormy Daniels. We're talking a lot about the campaign finance, which a lot of people feel might be hard to prove in the end because it does deal with sex and things of that nature. Could there be a lot more in this? The former CFO of the Trump Organization, Al Weiselberg, I believe is in prison right now serving a six-month sentence because of things that he did.
Yes, but he's so far as we know, he's never turned against Trump. Of course, the pressure was put on Weiselberg because had he turned against Trump, as Michael Cohen, Trump's former lawyer, certainly turned against him, then there's an old country expression, the fat would really be in the fire, but it hasn't happened. Let me just tell you that when I said to you earlier on that it is not beneficial for some of the comments from his supporters, and I'm not at all saying his supporters shouldn't protest if they think he's innocent and shouldn't say that this is the wrong thing to do to him. I'm not for a moment suggesting that. But listen to some of the things they said. Ron DeSantis of Florida, it's the weaponization of the legal system to advance a political agenda, and it turns the rule of law on its head. Your own congressman, Jim Jordan, one word, outrageous. The Speaker of the House of Representatives, Kevin McCarthy, these are all Republicans, tweeted that Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg has, quote, irreparably damaged our country, the American people will not tolerate this injustice, and the House of Representatives will hold Alvin Bragg and his unprecedented abuse of power to account. Never mind what the evidence shows. We've already decided, Mr. Carthy has, that Bragg is a terrible man. It was just a political prosecution, and he will pay the price. And people don't know who Ronnie Jackson is. He was a doctor in the White House. He was the naval rear admiral, but he was a physician who took care of Presidents George Bush and Obama and Mr. Trump. And he's very close to Trump. And he's tweeted now because he's in Congress. He ran for Congress in Texas. He was elected in the 13th District, a Republican. And he says, this is a dark day in American history. President Trump's only crime was making America great again. These cowardly Democrats hate Trump and hate his voters even more. When Trump wins, these people will pay. Well, it boggles the mind. Mike Pence, the former vice president, says the indictment was wrong. It's an outrage, a political attack. But Mike Pence said on CNN last night that no one is above the law, that the legal process should be allowed to work, and protests must remain peaceful. And I think that's the right thing to say. But on Fox News, guess who? Tucker Carlson, who has the biggest audience of talk show in the cable network system, said the ruling showed it was, quote, probably not the best time to give up your AR-15s, close quote. Thank you, Mr. Tucker Carlson. Thank you for saying, let's keep it peaceful, let's fight this battle in the courts. Don't give up your AR-15s. After all, they've been used so successfully in schools, against churches, in nightclubs for the last several years. Why not keep them handy now? Well, it's this kind of talk that I think is outrageous, and it makes the system much more difficult to operate fairly and properly, in which case the former president, I think, ought to have and will get a fair trial. You do that, and you want to take it in the streets, both sides have guns.
Sam, because of what you just said, basically our own congressman here in this district, Tucker Carlson, on Fox News last night, and that very striking comment that he made, does this say that the Republican Party, no matter what they say in the back room, because obviously Tucker Carlson, through some text messages, apparently had some different feelings about former President Trump after...
Yes. private, which now, because of the Dominion case, suing for libel against the company that makes the machines that count votes, we see that Tucker Carlson thought Trump was terrible, this outrageous guy himself. That was privately. But he's making lots of money on Fox by doing the other side. What a guy.
So does this say that Fox News, Ron DeSantis, the majority of the Republican Party, Lindsey Graham, that they still, even with an indictment, have to have Trump to be elected? They cannot separate themselves. They really can't even be silent at this point.
Well, they cannot separate themselves in many districts and in many states from their own re-election. That is quite true. But what about nationally? President Trump was elected in 2016 narrowly, but he was barely elected. But 2 years later, they lost seats under his regime. In 2020, he lost the election. Never mind his lies. The courts have determined in every case brought that there was no evidence, that there was fraud. His own former Attorney General, William Barr, said publicly in December of that year there was no evidence of fraud. He's perpetuated the lie. And then this last November, what happened? Once again, the Trump appointees to win office, Kerry Lake in Arizona, Dr. Oz in Pennsylvania, go down the list. At the top of the tickets, not down tickets, at the top of the tickets, lost. And so many Republicans who have their heads on straight from the standpoint of wanting to win an election don't want Donald J. Trump to be the nominee in 2024. They believe that almost anyone else will have a better chance against who? Well, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. I think they're going to run again, but I can't tell you. I don't know. It's a little early for that. They want someone else. But as you pointed out, Scott, Trump's face now is solidified even more. They want Trump. They want to make certain that this dastardly deed that's done against him of indicting him is proved wrong. But I'm just going to take one more moment and I'll let you get into your own program. I want to read a little bit from one more editorial. The Wall Street Journal, owned by who? Rupert Murdoch, the very man who has publicly now testified that some of his Fox people were wrong in asserting the big lie, etc. And he, of course, didn't write this editorial himself, but he clearly approved it. Says, the news is a sad day for the country, with political ramifications that are unpredictable and probably destructive. And I'm not paraphrasing, I'm quoting, but I'm skipping the various parts. Perhaps Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg has new evidence that will be compelling. The evidence should also be solid enough that a reasonable voter would find it persuasive. The last thing a politically polarized America needs is a case in which partisans line up on either side like a political O.J. Simpson trial. The prosecution must be seen by most of the country as an example of fair-minded justice. But what that editorial says that Mr. Murdoch approved is not, hey, keep your AR-15s close, and it's a dastardly... we're going to have a fair trial for Mr. Trump. Let's hope the evidence demonstrates what the jury should decide one way or the other. That's what everyone wants. Everyone who thinks straight, I think, and cares about the country and cares about sealing this division wants that. And the Wall Street Journal wants that.
The next step in all of this, the Manhattan District Attorney's Office is talking with President Trump's legal counsel about his surrender. Now, I think it's looking like next Tuesday right now. Things could change, but I think that's the reporting that I saw this morning. What happens next in a case like this?
Well, yes. Not only do we have, as the leak say, it'll be next Tuesday, or rather, when I say the leak, it might be at 2:15 Eastern Time. So, you know, look at your stopwatches. Well, what happens is, it will be unusual, although they'll try to do the procedure that anybody who's indicted has to serve. But it's unusual because the Secret Service is charged with and ought to continue to perform its duty of maintaining the physical safety of this former president. And so Mr. Trump will go with the Secret Service in tow. He will surrender voluntarily, we're told. He will be fingerprinted. He will have mugshots taken of him, like anybody else. Now, almost anybody else will be handcuffed, sometimes in front, not just in back. I suspect that they will not I have no sources, but I suspect, and probably I believe they should not, handcuff Donald J. Trump. Yes, I believe no one is above the law. I believe everyone has to be fairly judged, but this president ought not to be one of which we look like the kangaroo court and the banana republic that his partisans really sometimes think. Then he'll go before a judge. He'll be arraigned. And since the charges are criminal charges, apparently, but a nonviolent criminal charge, he will be released on his own recognizance. There won't be a bail set. No. He will be freed because of nonviolent criminal charges. That is the case that anyone would have to perform. And so he'll walk out. That's what's going to happen next Tuesday, apparently, when he surrenders voluntarily.
When that happens, and again, this will be another unprecedented moment, a mugshot of a president of the United States, which I'm sure will be on the front page of every newspaper and on every television program as soon as they can get it. You talk about the kangaroo courts and not handcuffing Trump because he was a former president. When we look at that, when that mugshot comes out, and whether or not he's guilty or innocent, that's going to happen. A mugshot of a president of the United States, what does that mean in the history of the United States?
Well, again, unprecedented, but what it means depends on who you are and what your view is in this country. I've already seen people on Trump's side who say, hooray, we'll put that mugshot on T-shirts. It will be a sign of success for MAGA. This man is being unfairly persecuted. For the rest of us, it'll, I think, be a mark of shame, which, again, after a fair trial, we may decide that it was unfairly used, except that's the procedure for someone who's indicted. I can't stress enough the idea that the battle is now joined, and the battle is for the, I hate to use the hackneyed phrase that others have used, but I do believe it, for the soul of the country. Are we the United States that we once were? Imperfect, but making progress toward curing some of our social ills, curing some of the ignorance, poverty, discrimination of all forms. We were making progress, and we were the light of the world. We were Ronald Reagan's shining city on the hill. And I think we want to be that. Or do we want to revert to something else where all of our basest emotions give way? Who are those dark-looking people? Who are these people from the Mexico south of the border? Who are these Muslims? I mean, who are these Jews? I mean, I could go down this list of these terrible impulses that some people have. Are we going... And Mr. Trump has, if not begun them, he has certainly, well, there are good people on both sides, he said in Charlottesville as the Nazis marched along with protesters. He's encouraged the idea that, yes, we're going to determine in the battle, I think, that's joined now in not just this court, but other courts. And the evidence that is presented will persuade enough people of this country, if it is compelling evidence, that we don't want to change. We don't want Mr. Trump. We don't want the people who think like Mr. Trump to run this country. They're certainly welcome if they obey the laws. They're certainly welcome if they're good citizens. They are as much welcome in America as I am. But they're not going to run this country into the Viktor Orban of Romania, or certainly not Vladimir Putin or Xi Jinping of China, or go down the whole list of the world's great dictators. We're not going to have it.
Sam, another part of this that is very interesting, yes, he is a former president, but he is also running for president of the United States. Now, the common wisdom, again, and this is what I've read and seen this morning, is that yes, he can continue to run for president and raise money and things of that nature. But we talked about this indictment that most likely at this point will go down on Tuesday. Now, no bail, he'll be out on his own recognizance, but can a judge say, because he is running for president, you can't give speeches, you can't fundraise, you can't be on a debate stage, you can't tweet things that would be negative. Does anything change? Can the judge do anything?
I'm not a lawyer, I stress this, but in my view, no. The Constitution clearly does not prohibit, according to legal scholars that I respect who've spoken to this point, a person not only indicted but convicted of a crime from running for presidency of the United States. And from the standpoint of First Amendment, we continue to debate the safeguards around the First Amendment and also the problems with the misuse of it by people. But I don't see any change there. I don't see how a federal judge or a judge could prohibit Donald J. Trump. The statement he made, which I found unfortunate, from saying things like that. Now, he didn't say it again, but remember the other day, he actually called by saying, there will be violence if I'm indicted. He called for his supporters. That's what he did when he called them for the January 6th meeting in Washington. I don't see how you could legally or fairly prevent him from expressing himself.
Another point in this expression, and I want to go back to the DA in Manhattan, Alvin Bragg. Now that Trump has been indicted, and after he surrenders and is arraigned, again, we believe will happen on Tuesday, former President Trump has made some comments about Mr. Bragg. Now,
oh, yes, they called him an animal?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't quite say what kind of animal, but I think the implication was there. Go ahead.
In that vein, the man who has brought this indictment, can he make those comments about him in a trial that is going on? That now that this is no longer an investigation, that it's an indictment, it will be an arraignment, there will be a trial, can he make those type of comments or anything that could be construed as threatening about a single man prosecuting this case?
Well, a judge in a case that we're anticipating can keep decorum in that person, in his or her courtroom, and has the right to tell people that they must not speak loudly, has the right to tell people that they may not interfere with the fair conduct of the trial. So I don't quite know what you might have in mind if Donald Trump would not follow his attorneys, who clearly tell him to sit quietly, look well-dressed, don't bellow out, you're an animal, to Alvin Bragg. If he should do that, then of course he'll be reprimanded for it. He's not allowed to do that in the court, but out in the street, he can do anything he wants.
Want to go back to Watergate here for a second, because there was a very interesting interview that Bob Woodward did with Gerald Ford, and I want to come back and also make this point, that a lot of people were talking about pardons last night, because ever since Nixon, the pardon talk is big when something like this happens. Now, because this is a state crime, a pocket pardon, or if there would be a president who would be willing to pardon Donald Trump, those things can't happen because this is a state crime. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's correct. The presidents don't have the power to pardon for just mere state offenses. But in the case of Richard Nixon, I'm convinced that had he not been pardoned to Gerald Ford, he would have been indicted, and he would have been brought before a jury. The country was simply, oh, he had a 20, 21% supporter still, but the rest of the country was inflamed by what it discovered that a president of the United States had done. Up to that time, resigning one step ahead of the sheriff was something that hadn't happened. Now, of course, Donald Trump has brought that much farther forward from the standpoint of an unhappy president. I suppose what we're going to find at the end of this battle, again, I hope it's all in the courts, I hope it's in the elections, that the country returns to what I thought was a normalcy. You know, I hate to be melodramatic, but Bing Crosby singing White Christmas as the snow gently falls, and Norman Rockwell paintings on the wall. The kids don't even know what I'm talking about. And the morals that were there that have been supplanted with the type of coarse vulgarity that people feel free to use. Well, after all, if Donald Trump can say those words from the podium in the White House, why not I? And I'm not blaming Mr. Trump for all of the coarseness that's developed. It's the society. It's the education system. It's the lack of parentage at homes with broken families and with no parents and children raised in a way that I was fortunate enough, and I think perhaps you, Scott, and many of your listeners were fortunate not to be raised in the way children today are. So the society has simply changed, and we're just going to have to write it in the sense of doing away with the worst excesses that would destroy the country.
The parallel to Watergate I want to draw here is that, as I say, when Bob Woodward interviewed Gerald Ford years later about the pardon that he gave Richard Nixon, there was often thought there was a deal and things of that nature, and Ford contended, no, there was not a deal. If Nixon resigned, I become president and I'll pardon him. But what Ford did say was, in his later years, he said, I did this because, yes, it was likely that he was going to be indicted. It was likely he'd be arraigned. It would likely be that he would go on trial. And that, for a president, would dominate the news. It will hurt the economy. I would not have had my own presidency. It will overshadow everything because it would have been unprecedented. There would have been three more years of Watergate, and that's why I pardoned Richard Nixon and not the other people who did go to jail for Watergate. Many people went to jail. The trial of a president in Manhattan, and possibly other places, we don't know what other indictments are coming down the path, but in Gerald Ford's mind, does it cause the problem now 50 years later, that it would have caused in 1973?
Well, I was, as ABC News as a Watergate correspondent, I was opposed to Ford's pardon of Richard Nixon at the time. But as time went by and I reflected on it, I think he was right. I think the country would have been torn apart. Where would the battle have been over Nixon? Let me just say one thing. There was a deal. It was not a spoken deal. In so many words, the deal went like this. Mr. Nixon's people went to Ford's people and said the president's in terrible shape, terrible turmoil and all of this. But he just fears if he doesn't see it through, trial and all of that, something will happen to him and it'd be terrible. And Ford's people said, well, I think Vice President agrees that that's terrible if it happened. See, no one said, okay, I'll give him a pardon. It was an unwritten and unsaid thing, and I think Mr. Nixon left fairly confident that at some point Gerald Ford would do it. Again, I want to stress, I think Ford was right. You know, Scott, I've enjoyed our conversation. There's one subject we haven't discussed, and I'm sorry to bring it up because I don't have a view on it that's positive one way or the other. What happens now in the 2024 election? Does this indictment and others coming, which I think may occur against Donald J. Trump, work for or against him? I think it works for him as far as the nomination is concerned. It solidifies that base. It was looking at Ron DeSantis, and you know, and we've lost elections with Ford's people up there at the top, and with Ford himself at the. Oh no, we've got to. I think it helps him at the moment, at least, on running for the nomination of his party. The Wall Street Journal did a poll just recently, which showed him up 11 points over DeSantis, where he'd been losing. But does it help him in a general election? Do people who voted clearly in 2020 against Donald J. Trump while voting for some Republicans down ballot, do they change their mind now? Well, if all the evidence against him proves not to be substantial and he's innocent, perhaps so. But if he's convicted, do they say, I don't care, he has a right to run for president and be elected even under the Constitution if he's convicted of a crime, and so I'm going to vote for him? I don't think so. I don't think so. I think in the long run, it hurts him if he's the nominee of the party. And that's why many people, by the way, we've heard from a lot of Republicans. Have we heard from the minority leader of the Senate? I don't believe so. Well, all right. He's busy, I'm certain. There are Republicans who want Donald Trump not to be the nominee of the party. And I think at the moment they're worried this helps defeat that hope. But in the general election, I think a lot of Democrats think, yeah, bring it on. We have a problem maybe with Joe Biden being too old and fumbling. And maybe people think Vice President Harris is not really up to being president. If they're going to run, what do we do? Well, if we're running against Donald J. Trump, we breathe somewhat easier. And all this analysis may be wrong, but that's my view at the moment.
Three questions I want to get in here in our final 5 minutes, Sam. The process here, once the arraignment happens, we've got the indictment, the arraignment will happen. The trial itself, how quick will this get underway? How long a trial lasts in a matter like this? What does this look like?
Well, it'll take months, I suspect. They could try to speed it up. And, of course, they want that trial over with, and any trial's over with before the 2024 elections. But they can't do it in a few weeks. They have to give the defense time not just the prosecution, which has a lot of its ducks in line because they brought a prosecution thinking they had the evidence in hand, at least most of it. But the defense has the right and the need now to having, when they see the indictment, they see exactly what the charges are, to assemble their best defense, and it takes time to do so. So I would suspect here we are, the 1st of April coming up. It's going to be late summer or fall, or maybe later, before the jury will hear the evidence in court.
When we talk about further indictments, people who worked on the Trump campaign in 2016 were involved in the White House and were also involved in the Trump organization, the company itself. We're talking about his kids. Is that a possibility coming down the pike indictment-wise?
I don't know. I'm completely in the dark as to whether the two boys, and well, maybe even his daughter, but the two boys, one of the daughters, Ivanka, face any prosecution. I have not heard anything to that extent, but I must tell you I have not examined it, and I don't have sources that I once had when I was a working reporter.
Not to trivialize this by putting it this way, but when President Trump goes to Manhattan and that mugshot comes out and he is arraigned and the indictment comes out and we know a whole lot more information by the middle of next week than we know now, what are the chances, in your opinion, that we will see protests, hopefully peaceful, but possibly not after what happened on January the 6th?
Well, it's Donald Trump himself who is fanning the flames of protest. And again, he said it a couple of weeks ago. I didn't say it yesterday, but he was really urging people to take the streets. There will be violence, he says. Well, how do you know there'll be violence? Well, I just know there will be, because my people won't stand for this. Well, come on, that's the call for it. I hope it doesn't happen. But again, it's a tough thing to say. I don't think if it happens, it'll be one-sided. And that's also a terrible, terrible thought that would occur in our country at this time. This is not 1861.
Sam, final question here this morning, and maybe it's just more of a personal one here. You have interviewed this man, and Donald Trump has been a part of the American culture for quite some time now. Yes, he is a former president. Yes, he ran for office. But we are talking about a man who was on a television show, reality show, The Apprentice, You're Fired, co-wrote or shadow wrote The Art of the Deal, was this guy who went on Letterman and Donahue and all these shows and always got a good rating. He was entertaining. With the hair, friends with Barbara Walters, got into the fight with Rosie O'Donnell. Donald Trump's been around since the early 1980s. What does this say about the man? Because in American pop culture, he is more than a president, much the way Ronald Reagan was. For this to happen...
For years, he was a curiosity, a fun guy in New York, a con man. People knew him that way and saw him that way. When I interviewed him in 1991 for Primetime Live, it was because he was failing in his businesses. His airline was failing. He couldn't surface the debt. He couldn't pay the debt down on the Plaza Hotel, the Taj Mahal that he'd built. In, I mean, he was going to go under, but you should see that interview. He was younger. He looked good. He could finish a sentence without wandering off into an irrelevancy. He had it down, and he blew smoke. Of course, 6 months later, he'd lost everything. But I didn't go away thinking, oh, here's a former president in the making. I just thought, here's a con man who failed, and he'll keep conning people, whether it's insurance, whether it's wine, whether it's college education. I mean, you go round the line. He tries these things, he makes money, and his people that he doesn't pay lose. Because Donald J. Trump, excuse me, folks, it's my private opinion, you can strongly disagree, thinks only of himself.
And before we break here, Sam, so my question in all of that was, what does this say? If you take away the policies and you didn't like what he did and you didn't agree with him politically, the man himself being indicted, going on trial, what in the end does it say about him in the history books?
Well, history will mash it out. They're still writing new books about Abraham Lincoln, and the point is it'll take years and years. It's like Jimmy Carter. Left the presidency, people said, what a terrible president. Good. And now, already at the end of his life, being revised, the things he accomplished, not just he's a wonderful man with Habitat for Humanity, building houses and helping get rid of guinea worm in Africa and peace conferences, but he's just a kind of a decent guy, the kind of American you'd like to say, he's my neighbor. And what will I say about Donald Trump? You can't see anything at the moment that will revise what he looks like. But stick around, Scott. If you and I are talking 100 years from now, not only is that a miracle, but we may have a different view.
Sam Donaldson, the absolute best. Sam, thank you so much for joining us this morning, and who knows what's going to happen in the weeks to come.
See you, Scott. Thanks.
Thank you. Sam Donaldson, what a way to start off the morning. We've got Pastor Whitaker coming up next hour, and then I'll be back at 10:15 a.m. Don't you dare go anywhere.
This is Bill Macy, Walter, from the hit TV series Maud, WWGH 107.1.